Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 27, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons and Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, a new federal study looks at the nation's waterways. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, we'll hear from Phil Warburg, author of the book Harvest the Wind. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Here are your last trades for this Wednesday afternoon. In Kansas City, May wheat, 774 and three quarters, up 6 1/4. July, 779 and a half, up 5 3/4. May wheat in Chicago, 737 and a half, up 6. July, 735, up 2 3/4. May corn, 736, up 5 3/4. July, 716 and a quarter, up 4. December, 570 and a half, down a half. May soybeans, 1452, up 4 1/4. July, 1431 and a half, up 5. September, 1314 and a quarter, up 2 1/4. And November, at 1278, up 1 1/2. May soybean meal, 423.50, up 330. July, 418, up 250. May soybean oil, 50.82. This is a settlement unchanged on the day. April live cattle, 127.25, up 130. March feeder cattle, 135.17 and a half, up 32 and a half. April lean hogs, 80.05, up 55. And May lean hogs, 89.15, down 62 and a half. And those are your last trades and settlements on this Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business, so Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says frost and freezes occurred this morning in the U.S. Delta and a part of the interior southeastern U.S. Wheat in the joint and boot stage of development was likely impacted. A colder than usual bias in temperatures will continue across the U.S. Midwest during the first half of April, with only short periods of warmer weather anticipated. Limited precipitation will occur in the U.S. Midwest over the next 2 days, but rain and snow will be returning more often later this week and next week. Long-term deep subsoil moisture and water supply in the U.S. Plains and Western Corn Belt remains well below average despite recent precipitation improvements. Three storm systems will impact the U.S. Central Plains during the coming week, raising soil moisture in some areas and maintaining favorable soil moisture in other areas.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Before we delve into particulars and then begin to try to figure out what is going to happen at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, let's get your overall assessment on how the trade traded up to this point this week.
Well, I think when you look at the we were trading some very positive numbers. When you look at oil prop, there's no question about that. We've seen when you look at May today, this is the first time we've traded above 736 since the 5th of February. And on the wheat side of things, of course, wheat's kind of always the sad little sister. Nobody talks about it very much, but we actually hit 740 today for the first time since the 21st of February, primarily in what you were talking about with Drew Lerner, with the cold weather down in the south. On the bean side, very positive. And, we've seen a nice increase in those prices prior to this report. I think during the day today, we actually saw some short covering come in. And then right after that, we saw some selling come in against it, too. So I think everybody will be really happy. I know I was sure happy that at the beginning of today we only had one more day to get into this report.
So December corn hits 573 and three quarters. Should this number be honored for marketing before the report numbers are released tomorrow in some way, do you think?
Well, I think that I'm still, recommending doing in-the-money puts on the December corn and the same thing on the November beans. I believe, if there's going to be a surprise on the report, the surprise might be that we have a little heavier grain stocks on corn than what they thought and a little less acreage on December corn. And so I think, therefore, we could get a pop out of the market on the December corn and maybe a little pressure against the old crop corn. From an old crop standpoint, I think it'll hang on. It's not going to just plummet. Even if we come in with a higher number, we know that Argentina is sending its first shipment into Mobile, Alabama, and their spot price is $6.94 at the port before shipping. So that says a lot for the need for old crop corn. But I do think that before 11 o'clock tomorrow, if somebody doesn't have anything done, they most definitely should at least get some puts in place. We have the short-dated puts that you can buy an at-the-money put right now for somewhere around 15, 16 cents in the May contract. It's only good for 30 days, and that's the negative part about a short-dated put. They do not carry enough time, and that's why they're cheaper, because you're not paying for a lot of time, but at the very same time, you have time value decay working against you. So it isn't a bad thing to do for a one day and to get yourself through the report, but they have to be prepared. I've been telling guys today, we get a pop in this market, get yourself covered and get some puts in place. If we don't get a pop in this market, get yourself covered and get some puts in place. I know Drew was saying we're supposed to be cool through the first part of April, but, you look at NOAA, they're talking about a potential warm summer and warmer spring, and we can certainly see a huge change in a short amount of time. I've been contacting guys all over here in the Illinois area to find out if they think they're going to be behind on planting. And I'm not finding anybody who said they're going to be behind their normal planting. Behind last year's, yes, but not behind normal. So I just don't think you can take a chance.
In 2 weeks, the state of Illinois could easily put in 60% or more of a corn crop.
Oh, there's no question about that. And I think that's the thing we have to recognize. I think the other thing you also have to keep in mind is, if the weather turns here and we begin to get on the land in the next 3 weeks, CME is located here. And therefore, they will ignore the fact that we have some pretty strong drought situations still out to the west. And until everything's proven there. And, there's a lot of problems out there, too. There's just an immense amount of irrigation problems and shortages of moisture. I talked to one of the guys from Nebraska today. They're drilling wells like wild. And they're just hoping, because otherwise, in some parts of Nebraska, they may not raise a crop just because they cannot get the water that they need. But you can't count on that. And so the one thing you can count on is that the trade will believe that there's going to be a big crop until somebody proves to them there's not going to be.
Will the trade believe a number like 5.2 million bushels on the quarterly grains stock report, given that the WASDE report already painted USDA into a corner in a little bit by adding 100 million bushels to feed and residual?
Well, I think that, you know, the average guess is right around 5 billion. So I believe that, the trade would believe it. I also believe that a lot of that is traded into the market already. And so all it will do for us is continue to push this market sideways in the futures, perhaps, and higher in the basis. But if we do get a pop in the market, let's say that we bounce up 15 cents on corn tomorrow and we hit 750, that might give guys $8 cash. Then I think we'd see some selling come out of the country also.
But would they have enough time to take advantage of that opportunity, or is it going to be a volatile blip?
Well, I think it would be volatile, but, you know, they can take advantage of that just by having orders sitting on the books. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have an order sitting in and it's an $8 bid order that's at the elevator, it'll get taken. You know, so it's just a matter of being prepared. I think that's the biggest thing for any of this. You know, you've got to be prepared if that market goes higher. You also have to be prepared if it's going to go lower.
We talked this morning about wheat potentially being the sleeper in all this. You still feel that way?
I do. I really do. I think that, you know, wheat has some, you know, wheat's a crazy crop. And, you know, wheat and corn are hanging in there with each other right now in the futures. They've been neck and neck all day today. And, you know, the advantage to feed wheat over corn, technically from a price side, isn't there, even though I do believe we will see wheat substituted. But, you know, we're still far behind the rest of the world when it comes to price. And you saw Russia sell intervention grain again today. Just tells me that they are not flush in grain, and so therefore wheat has an opportunity to go higher. Everybody's waiting to see what's going to happen when it comes out of dormancy out west.
Let's turn our attention to this little tidbit. Who's buying Argentine corn?
You mean who's bringing it into the U.S.?
Yes.
Is that what you're asking me?
Who's doing that?
Well, I couldn't tell you exactly who it is, but I can kind of guess. I think that it makes complete sense. If you're sitting on any aflatoxin corn, you need to have high quality, good corn to bring in to blend. And why not? Why else would you pay $6.94 before shipping? And remember, a lot of our guys were docked $2 a bushel when they sold aflatoxin corn, so that, you know, they can absorb the cost of the freight on that, use it to get rid of it, and go from there. But you know, when you look at the bigger picture, I think that, you know, the Cargills, Bungies, the ADMs are located in South America, too, and this whole infrastructure problem that's down there is going to only be amplified when, you know, double crop corn comes on, and it'll make it harder for them to be able to bring grain out of that area, too. So I think it's just, you know, there's something like 8 cargoes there that have been spoken for from Argentina. And I'm not surprised by it. Businesses have to do what they have to do to be able to continue to survive and meet the needs of their clients.
And quickly, something about Brazilian beans being late and I guess the impact on the November bean contract eventually.
Well, that's an issue that we've got. I heard a lot of guys talking today about, oh, they've got fuzzy caterpillars down there and they're just spraying like crazy. And, you know, I think you've got to take that type of a hope thought and put it to the side and say, okay, we know they're going to have a record crop. But the thing they have is they've got severe problems. They've got truck law problems that are keeping trucks off the road. They've got infrastructure issues like potholes, high fuel prices. And even though Bunge came out and said, oh, we'll be done shipping by September just like normal, Dr. Cornier said it was going to be November, and I probably put more credence into what he says. And some other people are saying they may end up shipping all the way into January because, you know, they've been having rain on and off, which makes it very difficult. They don't have covered loadouts, so the ports mm-hmm. have to shut down. Okay. Right now they have 15-mile lines for unloading trucks. 212 ships are sitting down there waiting, so I would think that that will probably lead to some cancellations. And the world's largest soybean farmer, Ray Scheffer, said he went out and he bought 200 trucks to try and counter the worst transportation situation he has ever seen in his 30 years farming in Brazil. And he said the problem is, and he's in Mato Grosso, he said, we have done everything to improve our infrastructure, and we are surrounded by infrastructure that was the same as it was 30 years ago when we started.
Well, we'll just have to leave it right there then. Thank you, Jackie.
You have a good one. Thank you.
That's Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and she is in Champaign, Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
In agricultural news, a new federal report paints a picture of overall diminishing water quality in rivers and streams across the U.S. Results from an Environmental Protection Agency study shows that about 55% of river and stream miles examined in 2008 and 9 are in poor condition for aquatic life. Overall, the study found that nitrogen and phosphorus were at excessive levels. The study found significant reductions in water quality related to phosphorus loadings from 2004 up to the latest survey. Nationally, 52.8% of stream length was found to be in good condition for phosphorus in 2004, compared to 34.2% in 2008 and 9. Data collected and analyzed during the 2008-9 National Rivers and Stream Assessment, which was released yesterday, found that the improvement in stream conditions for nitrogen comes from statistically significant gains in water quality made outside the Corn Belt in the eastern highlands and the west. The percentage of stream length in good condition for nitrogen has risen nationally from 46.6% in 2004 to 55.4% in 2008-2009. A new University of Illinois study indicates the yield penalty for continuous corn is real. The U of I model, based on field data, showed a 10 bushel per acre average loss in fields with 3 years of continuous corn compared to a traditional corn and soybean rotation. The yield penalty grew to 25 bushels by the fifth year of continuous corn. It's estimated that growers growing corn on corn 7 years might experience a 35 to 45 bushel per acre loss compared to corn yields in a corn-soy rotation. A survey conducted for Rasmussen Reports finds that half of the general public would favor a plan to break up the 12 U.S. megabanks that control about 69% of the nation's banking industry. Congress has not been especially inclined to do much to rein in too-big-to-fail, too-big-to-jail financial institutions, in spite of urgings from organizations such as the Independent Community Bankers of America. Congress is working on legislation that would reauthorize water infrastructure repair and development activities, with new emphasis on the need to dredge a number of U.S. ports to accommodate the larger ships that will soon be traveling the newly redesigned larger and deeper Panama Canal. Currently, the larger ships cannot use all U.S. ports because of logistical problems. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has said the full Senate most likely will take up the bill in early May. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Philip Warburg is author of the book Harvest the Wind, a journey one man took around the middle of the U.S. to see the huge impacts that wind energy is having on rural farm communities. One of the biggest benefits farming communities mentioned about wind energy are lease payments paid to landowners, which Warburg says are a valuable buffer against the uncertainties of weather and a great hedge against the ups and downs in grain and cattle prices.
Crops can fail, and cattle herds may have to be sent to feedlots early. That's what happened during last summer's terrible drought. But wind farm lease payments are guaranteed, and they'll continue to be a sure bet for a quarter century or more.
Another benefit people in rural communities mentioned to Warburg are the jobs created by wind energy. In many rural communities, he says wind farms brought the first big infusion of new jobs in decades.
Along with the security created by these jobs, Many people now working in the wind industry take great pride in their work. They're getting in on the ground floor of an exciting new technology that could be as important to America in the coming century as oil has been during the past 100 years.
Warburg did most of his research in Cloud County, Kansas. He says many people there see wind power as helping make America more energy independent. Warburg says they have watched too many of their sons and daughters go off to fight wars that they see as caused, at least in part, by the nation's over-reliance on imported Middle East oil.
One business leader in Cloud County put it in these terms. He said, either we're going to have to put more wind turbines on our Kansas prairie, or we'll have to continue burying our fine young men and women under it. Wind farms tap an American energy resource, and they create good, well-paying American jobs. Those are two huge advantages of wind power.
Philip Warburg, author of the book Harvest the Wind. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Scott Butcher of the Andersons. He is in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Scott.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, let's see here. Futures corn in new crop hit 573 3/4. Old crop, 737 3/4. Did either of those numbers entice phones to ring today?
Yeah, a little bit of activity here in the last couple of days. It seems like here before the report tomorrow that we've had a little bit of interest, both old and new crop, for, maybe some folks to get some more sales on the books.
So 737 3/4 is a number they now like. I kept thinking, they're going to hold out for $8. There's a lot of gambling corn left out there, and that's what they're going to want.
Yeah, and I agree. I think there are, some folks out there that are waiting for $8 to come back around. But, it seems like in the last few days, the folks that we have talked to are content with where prices are at right now and, starting to get more doubtful that they would see $8 again.
What are the expectations when you talk to producers or other people who work there at Clymers about tomorrow's two big reports?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, mostly, obviously the acreage number is big for everybody, just trying to, get a handle on what those two numbers for corn and soybeans are going to look like for next year, kind of the first guess that we have. And then also the stocks numbers, coming out for corn and soybeans, both just exactly, how tight are we and, where we're headed from here.
Do you think there's going to be a surprise?
I don't, Dave. I really don't see much of a surprise in there. I think it's, obvious that we're behind on planting in a lot of different areas, not necessarily in our area, but to the south where they've been wet. Definitely there's going to be some changes to those acreage numbers, but probably not in this report.
Why don't we go ahead and get your prices today then, please?
Cash corn tonight, we are $7.63. Soybeans, $14.75.
Thank you very much, Scott.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Scott Butcher of the Andersons, and he is in Clymers, Indiana. In 2 minutes, I'll be back to talk agricultural weather with World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. It's National Spanish Paella Day. The rice dish evidently originated in Spain in the mid-19th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1860, M.L. Byrne patented a new and improved corkscrew. Byrne claimed the design would provide greater strength and durability and that it could be manufactured at less cost than prior construction methods using a spiral twist of steel wire that gradually tapered from the handle to the point. In 1849, Joseph Couch received the first U.S. patent for a steam-powered percussion rock drill. In 1884, the first long-distance telephone call was made between Boston and New York City.
Branch managers of the American Bell Telephone Company in Boston called their counterparts in New York City. Although they reported the call was perfectly clear, maintaining clarity on long-distance phone calls proved problematic until the early 1900s. In 1923, Sir James Dewar died. He invented the Dewar flask. The double-walled vacuum flask was commercialized in 1904 by a German company, which named the new product a thermos. And in 2001, China reported its population at 1.26 billion people. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
The question that many people will have who trade commodities is trying to understand the impact that frosts and freezes have had in parts of the Delta and the southeastern U.S. Can you at least quantify how widespread those weather conditions were as we try to figure out maybe how much of the wheat crop might have been damaged?
Certainly. The cold weather this morning in the Delta and parts of the Tennessee River Basin and interior southeast was varied quite a bit, but temperatures in the Delta in particular got down below freezing all the way down to just north of the coast, just into the sugarcane country in southern parts of Louisiana. So there was at least a light freeze or frost occurring in many areas across the Delta. Extreme lows were in the middle 20s across the northern part of the region. I think the coldest temperature I saw was around 23 or 24 degrees in the northern parts of the Delta. The lower Delta, most of the coldest temperatures were around 28. I think there might have been a 27 down there. The majority of the wheat crop, to the best of my knowledge at this point, is running in the joint stage with some booting going on in the south. These temperatures are at the damage threshold or actually slightly below it for some of the more advanced jointing and booting crop, and so we do expect to see a little bit of damage. If we take this area and add it to the part of Texas that was hurt by freezes earlier this week, the total percentage of wheat that is at least vulnerable to lost production is probably around 2 to maybe 3%. That may be a little high. Again, it's going to depend on local conditions from one field to another, but it wouldn't be any more than that. So we're going to say 2 to 3% for right now, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see it come back to around 2% or a little less.
And the other big question, of course, is when will producers, Illinois, Indiana, places where our radio signal reaches, begin to plant their corn crop? We know it's going to be cold into the first couple of weeks of April. When do you think that we might see soil temperatures warm enough for planting?
I think maybe in that third week of April, that's a strong probability. We are going to continue to keep a little bit of a cooler bias going deeper into the spring season. But one of the main reasons for the unusually cold conditions here recently has been associated with the negative phase of Arctic oscillation. And that is expected to gradually abate as we move through these next 2 weeks. So the temperature anomalies will become a little less significant as we move towards mid-month. And I think that we will get enough warming between a couple of storm systems at that point that we will get some of those temperatures up to the minimum threshold so that we can go ahead and proceed with planting. But it will probably be a pretty slow process. So I don't really expect to see much field activity, at least before the middle of the month.
Thank you, Drew.
Have a good afternoon.
That's World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.